the Cocoa, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Pompeii, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Cocoa, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are also heard on the World Wide Web.
That would be on 1510 WWBC.com, as well as on the app WWBC. Search for that in your app store and listen in anywhere around the world.
So each week, or I should say every week, or I should say on Mondays, Ellen Little, myself, and Samantha, we sit here in the studio. Everything here is organized by Paul. He is the producer of our show, our guy that runs our board, takes care of us for years upon years, and makes sure that we're able to have high-quality shows here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And we speak about topics that are near and dear to our heart, things that are happening around the nation, things that are happening right here in Brevard County, what we like to call kitchen table topics. Correct, Samantha?
Absolutely. And we're very informative, unscripted, educational, and inspirational sometimes, I hope.
Right. And so this week, Ellen is not here, but Samantha and I came back. We were gone for 2 weeks. Just wanted to let my listeners know that I did pick up the dreadful Delta variant at work. I was quarantined for 10 days, and then I returned to work, and I'm fine. I had mild symptoms because I was vaccinated. That's right. What I know and I feel. And a lot of nurses came down with it as well, and we had a few patients. But everybody is good now, and I can say that this year, compared to last year we did not have the vaccine, and people who did get COVID-19, we had a few deaths at the nursing home. But this year, praise God, with the vaccination, I don't think we had any.
That's amazing. No fatalities. That's a testament to the vaccine.
That's right. So I'm so grateful to be back on air and have a voice here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We have an action-packed show today. Our good friend, Shari Tabbitt, is here. I like your name.
Thank you.
It sounds like Talbot, but it's actually Tabbitt. Shari's here, and she's going to be speaking later about the housing market, and she's going to be talking about her agency. Well, I guess it's not really your agency. You work for Remax Elite, but your logo is No Place Like Home.
That's correct. Yes.
I know. That's what we were saying, like the place, No Place Like Home, and a real estate agent. And then I'm like, here with Remax. So You'll be chatting a little bit with us later about the housing market, how you got started with Remax, why you moved to Brevard County, and my God, all the nonprofits and the awesome things you're doing here in Brevard County, Florida.
Thank you.
Welcome to our show. And you know, Sam, it's very easy to have a show on radio if your heart's in the right place. Everybody, I guess, in Brevard and in our family knows I'm fiscally responsible and socially liberal.
Absolutely.
With a lot of things. And one of the things that near and dear to my heart is, you know, I've always said when you give birth to a child in the hospital, there should be a form that you fill out before you leave the hospital. Do you care about the environment in which this child is going to be raised? Yes or no?
Are you employed?
Are you employed?
Do you have health insurance?
Do you have health insurance? Exactly. Where is this child going to live? And most important, do you vote?
Because that should be in there.
Because so many people don't understand the right to vote.
And how important it is to vote. So many
people are trying to take away the right to vote. And so because of that, I had reached out to a friend of mine on Facebook. Her name is Judith. And I said, I'd like for you to call. And she had posted some articles about the voting rights and what's going on right now in our country. And she said, I can't do it, but I have somebody in Florida. I have friends who can, you know, I can have them call in. And so back and forth, I reached out and we found someone. And so his name is George Vasquez, and he's on the phone. He is a program director for our Power and Democracy Program at the Advancement Project. And this is in the national office, of course. And in this role, I don't know if it's Jorge. You're Spanish. So is it Jorge or is it George?
It depends on how he prefers, but usually
we'll
it's
Jorge. We'll ask him in a minute. But he leads the office voter protection, redistricting, rights restoration, and democracy initiatives throughout the United States. He currently serves as the chair of the voting rights section of the Hispanic National Bar Association. And my goodness, there's so much stuff here on his bio. I'm just going to let him tell us a little more about himself. So, Mr. Vasquez, you're on the phone, and thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Sita, first and foremost, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be on here. Thank you for welcoming Advancement Project on your platform. It's a pleasure to be here, and I go by Jorge. Thank you. Thank you
I kind of thought that. When I said it, I'm like, I'm from Trinidad, and you know, over there, people say George or whatever, but it's Jorge. So Samantha is here. Samantha is my Nazario. She is my co-host today, and we have the second segment. Our friend Shari Tabbitt is going to be speaking, and then you're on our first, and we are so delighted that you could take the time to call in. And as you know, voting is near and dear to my heart. I still remember the day that I took the oath to be a naturalized citizen in the United States. And to me, it meant getting involved, staying engaged, voting, and trying to make this earth a better place for the people that's going to come after us. And while we live here on earth, the one human race, make it better for all of us so that we all could survive on this earthly journey called life. And so when I read about you and all the stuff you're doing, Mr. Jorge, I was like, wow, we are very fortunate to have you call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
I was blown away. I was like, this is definitely a gentleman that I have to meet at some point along the line in person.
Yeah. Yeah. So where are you calling in from?
Today I'm calling in from Maryland.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So there's a lot going on in our nation right now. And we hear so many people in Texas and Florida and all different states speaking about the right to vote. And people are also speaking about those who would like to take away that right from others to vote. But I always say to people, if all of us had an anti-Maxine in our family, one person in our family that says, listen, I'm calling you every Sunday to make sure your voter's ID is accurate, your address is correct, you have a plan to vote, do you know where your precinct is, and is everybody else in that house registered to vote and staying engaged and year-round in politics? What do you say about that? That's the formula, don't you think?
It's totally the formula. And spoiler alert, that's one of the things that Advancement Project's national office does. We have a year-round program where we engage and educate voters and future voters on how they can exercise their power to vote. And what that entails locally in Florida is we meet year-round with secretaries of election. What we learned from the first time we started doing work in Florida over 20 years ago is that so much of voting that happens is discretionary. From what hours the polling sites are open. Certainly there are bottoms, right? You say you gotta be open at least X amount of hours, but nothing stops it from being open 15 hours, 20 hours. Nothing stops early voting from being at this location versus that location. And it's that creating a voter plan. It's the ability to engage voters and do it in a true nonpartisan way, because we understand that our system works when those within the system have the say. And in our republic here in the United States, it's a democracy where voters are the individuals who have the say by exercising their right to vote. And I love how you started off, Nisita, talking about being a naturalized citizen, because in 2020, what we saw was the largest amount of naturalized citizens voting in U.S. history. And as the U.S. becomes more diverse, that number is only going to increase. So we find ourselves in a position where we have to ask ourselves, how do we make America more inclusive to ensure that those who are eligible to vote have access to vote and understand what's at stake, right? Because all elections are local, and for many people, some only know there's a presidential election or there's a federal election. But you all are in Florida. As you know, Florida has special elections coming up. There are so many open seats in Florida right now. You have a primary in November for some of the congressional seats, primaries. You have the actual election coming up in January. So there's always an election around the corner. And it's important to understand how that election impacts the voters. And at Advancement Project's national office, if you go online to advancementproject.org and you check out our Power of Democracy program, we have a voter protection program. And in that program, what we do is we team up with community-based organizations. So if you're a community-based organization and you have questions, you want to know what your rights are, you want to know how you might be able to engage in creating just meetings with who's in charge of where a drop box is located. Who does the printing?
Jorge, I have a question for you.
Sure, please.
Last Friday marked the anniversary of the passage, of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. For our listeners who may be unfamiliar with it, talk to us about the historic legislation, what it did, and why was it so significant when it passed. What is the history of the legislation, and what is its legacy now?
Yeah, that flows right with what you were just talking about, with people going and checking out the Advancement Project and where the offices are, what you guys are doing. So tell us a little bit about the anniversary and the passage.
The anniversary, we just had the anniversary on Friday of the signing of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. And by far, that's the bedrock and foundation of equality as it relates to voting, right? The Voting Rights Act literally removed systemic barriers to black enfranchisement in the South. It banned polling tax and other measures that effectively prevented black communities from voting. But for our Latino listeners also, or English limited proficiency voters who English may not be the dominant language, it also provided an opportunity for individuals who might have a dominant language other than English to afford them the opportunity to have a ballot in that language. What we know is sometimes, even as an attorney, when I read ballot initiatives in English, it could be complex. Imagine if your dominant language is Spanish and you're reading something in English, it might be a little bit harder to navigate. So what this Voting Rights Act of 1965 did, it looked at what was holding people back, what was disenfranchising voters, and essentially created an opportunity to ensure that eligible voters were not prevented from participating in our democracy.
Yes. So we're at a crossroads right now, Mr. Vasquez. Jorge, I like his name now. Jorge Vasquez. We're at a moment now in the United States, I should say, when so many people are beginning to feel like they're asking themselves, are we fulfilling the legacy of the Voting Rights Act? Because nationally, we're feeling as though so many people are beginning to feel like their vote won't count, like they're disenfranchised. What can you say to those people right now in this moment?
I will say this, and you touched on this earlier in your segment, so I'm really paraphrasing some of the words you said, because you said it wonderfully. Voting is a learned experience. And in voting being a learned experience, we need to make sure that we're able to create access for all eligible voters to participate in the system, because the system works when everyone participates in it and everyone's vote counts. We know time after time again that we have the most secure election system out of any country, and that we're one of the only, if not the only, place in the world where literally every citizen who's eligible to vote and cast a vote can ensure that their vote is going to count. I mean, if we look at the 2000 election in Florida, we see that, you know, that was just decided by only a few hundred votes. So that's a reminder that literally every vote counts, because I'm sure if you call 200 friends up those 200 friends could call another 200 friends who didn't vote, and that'd go on and on again. And I'm saying that to show that we elected a president in 2000, and the president came down to just a few hundred votes. So that shows us that our vote counts. And we need to, like you mentioned in the opening of your show, how do we engage people from birth, essentially? Because understanding that voting is a learned experience, and when we talk about voting, when we make it inclusive, our community wins. And at Advancement Projects National Office, we want to make sure that our community wins and that our citizens are able to voice their opinions by casting a ballot.
Well, you know, your team at the Advancement Project are currently suing the state of Florida to block the implementation of SB 90. Talk to us a little bit about that lawsuit and what you hope to accomplish.
Yeah, so in that lawsuit, we're teaming up with Latino Justice, also Demos, and a law firm, Arnold and Porter. And what we're doing in Florida is that our partners and organizations we have been working with came to us and said, hey, this is happening. How do we prevent it from happening? So they started an advocacy campaign, but the law still passed. And they said, hey, this law is going to disenfranchise voters in multiple ways, and it's going to make it almost impossible for many of our members to cast a vote if they stop doing, you know, these things. So in that lawsuit, we're representing Faith in Florida, we're representing Florida Rising, we're representing Fuerte Latinx, we're representing Hispanic Federation, and others. And the gist of that lawsuit is to point and say, listen, these are all nonpartisan organizations with members on both sides of the aisle who are literally saying, if you implement this law, I won't be able to vote, or my vote may not count. We know that there are certain counties within Florida where social security numbers and state IDs are not available. And one of the simplest things to understand with SB 90 and some of the challenges to it is that why do you require different IDs for an individual voting by mail versus what's acceptable when someone votes in person?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm one of those people that I think while I'm alive and well and I have all my senses, the sense to speak, to smell, to hear, to walk, to think, to give back, I feel like it's my, I owe it to this world to give back. And activism is a form of doing that. And voting is a form of doing that. And working and paying my taxes to support social programs to help humanity is one of what I believe. But the thing is, when I go to vote in person, I just whip out my voter's ID card and I have my driver's license, and that's good enough. So why all this hoopla that, I mean, if somebody wants, in the last few elections, I voted from home. I voted absentee, and so did my husband. We voted by mail, and it was perfect. Our vote was received here in Brevard. There was a way to track it. There was no issues. Why all of a sudden there's this big, drama, I have to say, about voting by mail? What do you think happened?
What we saw happen, and the only thing that we could note, because as you said, Florida is a state where it has a robust vote-by-mail system. People have been voting by mail for decades, and we have states where the only way individuals could vote is by mail. The only difference we saw was that in the 2020 election, we saw a historical amount of Black and Latino voters who casted a ballot by mail. And many of those voters haven't traditionally voted by mail before then. So that's the only difference we could see. And what we're seeing is that individuals want to participate in our democracy. Individuals are looking for ways to ensure that their vote counts, and vote by mail is one of those ways.
Absolutely, Jorge. I actually was on the 2020 ballot for here for our city council in Melbourne, side by side with my mom. So that was a nice adventure.
And two Latinas.
Yes, two Latinas on the ballot together, mother and daughter, we didn't get as much traction. I'm not, you know, I'm aware of where I live. So we didn't get as much traction as we probably would have gotten in Orlando or in Miami or Tampa. So I did only lose by 3% on a first time run. But as you mentioned this, I'm curious, here in Brevard County, we service in our public schools over 21 second languages. How many languages do the ballots come in?
Well, that's something that's covered by the Voting Rights Act, Section 203. And in Florida, what we see is that most places only offer the ballot in two languages, and those two languages being Spanish and English. And there's a whole formula that's involved with determining what languages are mandated. But that's also one of those things that's discretionary, because if you have a whole list of voters whose dominant language is something else, there's nothing in the law stating that in your county it can't be offered in more languages. But what happens is that individuals don't know that that could be discretionary. So what we do at Advancing Projects office is just that. So for example, in Liberty County, Georgia, Liberty County did not meet the formula requirement for a Spanish ballot. But we met with the individuals who have that discretion. Our partners met with them. And together we were able to have them offer bilingual ballots for Spanish, native Spanish speakers in that county. And that's the same thing that could happen in any county for literally any language if the numbers are there. And that's one of those things that you would want in Florida, your Secretary of Election, to use his discretion to add something that would be more inclusive, right? Because we want an inclusive democracy.
And we want everybody to know what they're reading and what they're agreeing to, bills and different pieces of Senate that come up, different articles that are coming up. So as a voting rights leader, Jorge, what are the top three things voters should be doing now to ensure they are not disenfranchised in Florida's upcoming elections?
So, again, these are things that you touched on. You want to make sure your registration is active. You want to make sure that if you don't have the required ID, that you use this time to get the required ID. You want to make sure that you check online to make sure that your address is accurate. And more importantly, you want to create a voting plan. And if you need assistance with creating a voting plan, feel free to reach out to advancementproject.org, go online, advancementproject.org, /vote, and we'll be happy to assist you in how to create a voting plan, what should be in that voting plan. And also, I mean, you both did an amazing job. I'm literally just paraphrasing what you started out the segment with. How do you get others? How do you check on your neighbors? How do you check on your relatives?
Right. Well, I think the trick is how, you know, here we should just tell our listeners who we're speaking with, because I'm so proud of him. We're speaking with Jorge L. Vasquez Jr., and he's a program director for our Power and Democracy Program at the Advancement Project in the National Office. And, you know, I'm tickled pink because you've been on CNN, ABC, NPR, NBC, Telemundo. You're also a 2020 Institute of Politics Fellow at Harvard University, and just the kind of people I enjoy speaking with. I just learned so much from you.
I'm impressed just with Telemundo. We can't even get them to come to Brevard.
So here's what I want to say. You know, Jorge, I think the trick is for people to sit down on, you know, on a weekly, biweekly, monthly, whatever basis, and just like you sit down to have dinner with your family, at that family dinner, people should go around the table and talk about issues that are facing them. I mean, how is your financial literacy coming on? How are your credit cards? Are you planning to buy a home? Are you going for higher education? Which college are you attending? I mean, how is the environment where you live? I mean, how many children do you have? Do they have a college plan? And as you talk and speak to each other about issues affecting yourselves and your family, you'll find out that the people who make these decisions from the womb to the tomb are politicians from the local, state, and national level, and therefore you should be voting. And if you don't vote, you really don't have a right to complain, because you're still going to be sitting at home complaining when you didn't cast that vote. So how do we get more people?
You could have said it better.
Right. So how do we get more people to say, listen, I'm going to sit at my kitchen table and I'm going to start talking about issues affecting me and my family. And if a Democrat does what's good, great. If a Republican does it, great. But at the end of the day, everyone needs food, water, clothes, security, and they need to cast that vote. So what do we do to get more people to vote?
We start talking about voting outside of just elections, and we localize it, we personalize it, right? We know that federal interest rates are set by federal legislatures. Those are people that we vote for. We know that if you're walking down the street or you're driving down the street and there's a pothole, we know that that's decided by municipal legislatures. We need to meet our voters where they're at. Similarly, we need to ensure that those who are seeking our vote are speaking to us in our language. And when I say our language, I don't mean Spanish or English, but that they're meeting their potential constituents where they are, and that those people who are seeking our vote are able to tell us in our terms why we should vote for them and what their office does. Because part of it is some individuals may not understand the difference between a municipal legislature, an appointed official, versus a federal official. And we need to make sure that we're educating our community year-round. And that's why we have a year-round voter protection program at Advancement Project's national office. But for individuals, we need to make sure that we take our children with us when we go to vote. I remember
what you're saying is you lead by example. And Paul's giving me the signal that we only have like 30 seconds left. And I would love to have you call in again. The time goes by so fast. So give us the website for the Advancement Project, or how someone could get involved and send time, energy, money to help you all to keep up the good work you're doing for us.
Well, it was a pleasure being on your show. Thank you both for having me. Please reach out, www.advancementproject.org. We're on all social media. If you put in Advancement Project in a search engine, you can follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram. We're also on Facebook. If you have a question, you need assistance, we're here to help. We've been doing work in Florida for decades. We have colleagues who are employed in Florida. And we look forward to being back on the show again. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. A very big thank you, Jorge. And we look forward to speaking with you again. And please continue to do all the great work you do. We'll be back after these short messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9. That's cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9, Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast urgent care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Wow, what a great segment.
Fantastic.
To have a guest who's been on CNN, MSNBC, and NPR and everywhere else.
I am impressed
else.
With Telemundo. Yes. I can't get them to come to Brevard County, so that was big for me.
Yeah. Okay, so our second segment is with one of our ABWA sisters, Sherry Tabbitt. And Sherry's here to speak about RE/MAX and what she's doing. Selling houses and helping people.
Getting
to buy
people
houses.
Home. Dreams come true.
Yes, right. Making people happy. I mean, there's nothing like a home, right?
Until bad things start going wrong. But yeah, house is the American dream.
So Sherry was born and raised in New Berlin, Wisconsin. She graduated from New Berlin High School in 1980. For several years, she worked for the United States Post Office as a clerk, working in the night shift. And then in 1987, with the birth of her first daughter, she knew that she had to find a family-friendly career path, and she became an auditor, and I can't even read this. This is two pages
everything.
Long.
She's
she
amazing.
Does everything. You are an ABWA sister. You're a multi-million-dollar producer with RE/MAX Elite. You know what? I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you.
I really am, because when I read your bio, you're a mother of three adult children, and you spent time walking the beach, live music, Zumba, getting involved in a community. You do a lot with hospice, with ABWA. You just give back so much. So tell our listeners, why real estate? You settled on real estate, and there's more things to come for you as well. I don't think you're going to settle with real estate.
Well, one of the reasons I chose real estate was I love people. I love helping people. I've always been a people person. And there's nothing like finding that perfect home for a buyer and getting them to close and handing them their keys. And, I mean, talk about fulfilling and rewarding. You know, it's the American dream to own a home, and I'm helping them go through that process.
Right. So, again, it's like our guest in the first segment said, everything is about leading by example, right? If you live in a home where home ownership is huge, you are going to grow up to want to own your own home as well, because that's how we learn, right? But one of the things that people have a lot of issues with when they when they're trying to make that big purchase, actually the biggest purchase that's the most important, is credit.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about the people that come to you and want to buy a home, and then you put them in contact with a mortgage broker, and it's like, wait a minute, your credit is bad.
Well, I have some lenders that I work with that actually will help those buyers that where their credit falls short, whether it's, you know, maybe a past bankruptcy or maybe student loans or whatever, get their credit score up. They will help them. How can we do this? And usually within a few months, that lender can help them get their credit score where it needs to be so that they can get pre-approved for a loan.
Right. And, you know, I read once that people, when they're trying to sell a home, They put in new appliances, they paint it, they put carpet, they do all these wonderful things so somebody else could enjoy their home. I always wonder why we don't do that and enjoy our home while we live in it before we put it up to sell.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to put a new fridge. I'm going to update the carpet.
But you didn't enjoy any of the upgrades.
I know. I'm going to paint the inside. I'm even going to put new landscaping so I could get more money. But what are some of the biggest mistakes people make when they're trying to sell a home?
Well, some of the biggest mistakes is setting an unrealistic price. Everybody thinks that their home is worth so much money because a neighbor had got so much money, but they don't.
Or Zillow.
Exactly.
What a nightmare.
Exactly. So, they also have to take in consideration, what does that home have additionally that their own home doesn't have? Also, not preparing the home to sell it.
Yeah, like we just said.
Whether it's painting it, deep cleaning, decluttering it. So those are some of the biggest mistakes.
Declutter is huge, especially when you see pictures nobody wants to walk into a house and see everybody's stuff all over the place.
Yeah, you know what? But that's like a habit. We could do a whole show on people that don't declutter, right? Right? So what's the easiest and quickest and cheapest things sellers can do to their homes that would have the greatest impact besides doing it ahead of time?
Well, probably the biggest thing they could do, the easiest thing, is to paint their interior of their home. It freshens up the home, especially if you do it in a lighter neutral tone. It's going to make your house look bigger and brighter. And it's such an easy thing, and there is statistics proving that you paint your home and you do get additional money for your home.
Yeah, because it looks brighter.
Yes.
Lighter.
Yeah. And cleaner. Clean.
Yeah. People absolutely like that, right?
What are your top 3 questions buyers should ask about buying their home?
Well, probably one of the top questions, the age of the roof. Mm-hmm. Just because that, again, is a really big expense. Also, it translates into being able to get insurance. If it's an older roof and end of life, you may not be able to get insurance. And since your lender will require you to have insurance on your home to lend you, if you can't get insurance, you won't get a loan.
So if you buy cash, you probably won't have to worry about
Correct.
Oh, that's interesting.
But then you'll still have a problem acquiring insurance if the roof is too old.
Correct.
And especially here in Florida, iron cast pipes are still a very big issue in many places.
That's another big issue is you should be asking how old are the other systems in the house, the appliances. Because, again, those are big ticket items. The plumbing, the AC, the electrical, how old are those things? Because those could be issues for you in the future.
Well, and most people do get an inspection.
Yes.
And that'll point.
I encourage all of my clients to do that. Whether we think it's going to pass or not, that isn't the question. Even if it's a brand new home, I encourage them to get an inspection.
Yes, it's like a $400-$500 investment that really and truly might save you from making a huge mistake later on, right?
Correct.
So how can a buyer make an offer that really stands out? Because, of course, now there aren't a lot of homes on the market from what I'm hearing.
There's just about 1,400 homes on the market in Brevard County right
which
now.
Which is way the inventory is very, so
very low.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So how can somebody make their home stand out?
The offer on their home?
Yeah.
Well, there's several things. Being, again, like you said, it's a seller's market. You want to remove as many contingencies in that offer as possible. Make it as clean of an offer as possible. You're going to have probably in this multi-offer, what we are right
the
now.
The wave we're in, yeah.
Yeah. You need to put your best foot forward, give your best offer the first time out. Again, remove the contingencies. Do a short inspection period of, say, 5 to 7 days. And what I always do when I present my offer to the seller's agent is also have the inspection already scheduled. So that's telling the seller, hey, I'm on my game. This is a serious buyer. We have all of our ducks lined up. We want this deal to close.
And it's trust, too. I think when people see that you're working with them and you've got all your ducks lined up in a row, it's a question of trust.
Sure.
And she's taking the time to educate them in this process.
And they trust what she's doing because she's on their team, right?
I was 25 when I became a homeowner for the first time. And I was a 25-year-old kid. I'm with a kid. You know what I mean? Coming from New York, I knew nothing about windows. I knew nothing about hurricanes, and I moved here and got hit with four hurricanes. It was in 2004. So I learned, oh, my windows are from 1960-something. That wasn't very smart. So having someone with your knowledge in the forefront definitely helps your clients feel more secure. Because yes. windows was not something that I ever bothered to ask my realtor.
And you have to have shutters.
We did the whole wood thing. I never bothered to ask her how old are the windows. I liked the house because it was older, but I think, oh, wow, the original windows, really? So those kinds of things, having someone, especially from RE/MAX Elite, because I've dealt with them before, they're very knowledgeable and they're very honest with you.
They've been around a long time, and they also are known for their charitable contributions as well. There are so many ways that RE/MAX gives back to this community. And I've seen that with United Way and different places, and even with ABWA. So tell us some of the things that you all are doing in Brevard with the charitable contributions.
Sure. One of our big things at RE/MAX is the Children's Miracle Network. They encourage their agents to contribute with every sale, a portion of their commission to go to help the Children's Miracle Network. Also, myself, I have a lot of organizations that are near and dear to my heart. I support the Children's Hunger Project in the area, Genesis House, which is supporting homeless women, Serene Harbor, which is domestic abuse, and I also do volunteering at Hospice of Health First, which I enjoy.
Yeah. Hmm. I'm telling you, she never sleeps.
Wow. Many blessings.
People tell me
That's
I don't
amazing.
Sleep, but you don't. I think what it is, too, I think once you hit 50, you there's something that happens inside of your body. That tells you there's so much work to be done and so little time.
I think you're right, Sita.
And I
agree.
Think that's why people like you and I and even you,
what's going to happen to me? I'm only 40-something and I'm already there.
Yeah, well, wait till you hit 50 because then, then you want to give 2 hours to this cause and 2 hours to that cause. And it all adds up at the end of the year, what you did. It's productive, right?
Yes.
So what do you like about being a real estate agent, a realtor?
You know, I like meeting new people. I love helping people relocate from other areas. It's really satisfying to me. I like, of course, looking at homes. I mean, you get interesting ideas, of mm-hmm. course.
Yeah.
And that satisfaction of helping somebody fulfill their dreams.
Yeah. And I mean, I bet I remember buying my first home when I was 22. Because I come from a culture where people just don't rent. They all buy houses. Even if it's a small 10 by 10, you're going to build a 10 by 10. But we just don't rent. So, but I notice a lot of people, they don't think about stuff like that. Homeownership to me was the ultimate dream.
Me, mine
and
too.
And so it is for a lot of people in my culture, my friends, my family circle. Tell us about one of the success stories of a young couple that came and said, hey, you know what? We don't want to rent and make somebody else rich, pay somebody else's mortgage. We want to buy our own home. I'm sure you have young people that just make you smile.
And it does. And one of the things that really make me happy, too, is some of these young people that 3-4 years ago I sold them their home, they are still in touch with me.
Yes.
And telling me their improvements they have made to their house. And they're just so proud of their investment that they want to share it with me because I was such an important person in their life of getting. They never thought maybe they could get home ownership. Wow. I actually worked with one client that had just relocated here from Puerto Rico. So she had a little bit of a journey to make it to home ownership because, you know, she was new into the country.
Did that follow Hurricane Maria? I'm just curious because I know
it.
We have 289 families that came, and I believe we're up to something like 60 actual homeowners at this point 4 years later. So that makes me feel so good to hear that you were able to help somebody with that process.
Yes. And it was so nice. It was a little bit of a fixer-upper. Mm-hmm. But, you know, periodically she updates me where she's at. And one day she said, you know, I'm doing so well here that probably in the next couple of years, I would like to upsize and find something on the river. And you're going to be my realtor. And that to me was the biggest
compliment.
And they compliment.
Cook for you. They give you a lot of food.
Oh,
Puerto Ricans are like that. I mean, people from the Caribbean.
We like to cook.
People from the Caribbean, they become instant friends. But I mean, I'm really good friends with our real estate agent. We've known her for 15 years. But the thing is, they become family.
They do.
Because
they're
with you for that special
through that journey.
You know, home ownership, right? So what do you think some of the qualities you have stands out versus other people being a real estate agent?
Well, I think truly, I truly care. You know, I treat people like family. I provide them a full service experience. I feel like I go above and beyond customer service with them. And I think it's the relationships I build with them that start at the first consultation, goes to closing, and beyond. My relationships are, I still am in relationships with the people that I sold houses to when I first began 4 years ago. You know, I'm invited to their Christmas parties and baby showers and all those things. Mm-hmm. It's not just a client relationship. It's really a friendship.
Right. How do you keep up being a realtor? Like, you know, you'll have a sale that's closing and then somebody else calls, and now everything had to be done through Zoom and AuthorSign. How does one keep up? I mean, especially with you being so busy.
Somehow you just do it. But I do have a marketing person that I use that helps me out. I also do have a partner that I work with, David Cable. And he's a blessing that when I'm busy, he can help out, and vice versa. You just do it. You just make it happen. You prioritize what needs to be done first, and to keep everything on track.
With almost 5,000 realtors in Brevard County, that really just threw me off. Like, whoa. With almost 5,000 realtors in Brevard County, what makes you different from the other agents in the industry?
I think it's the relationship with my clients.
She's friendly.
Good. Yeah. You're heart to heart.
Yes.
You're invested in their future.
I am.
That shows
not,
through.
It's not just about a paycheck for me.
No, it's about them having a home.
Yes. And the home that they want to have, it's I listen to what they have to say to me of their wants and needs, and it's my job to go and find that for them and get them through the process, get them to closing day.
I'm sure you meet people from all different backgrounds, all different walks of life, rich, poor, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, different countries, naturalized citizens, people born here. But do you notice the jubilation from people from the islands when they buy a house? I mean, do you notice
yes.
how we go crazy? I mean, it's like...
Puerto Ricans cry.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I was crying like a baby the day they gave me my keys.
You notice the difference, right? Some people
right.
express their happiness and their sorrows and their joys and differently. It's all cultural.
But tears I've had, and gifts and everything.
Yeah, I've had realtors, you know, my friends who say, gee, you Caribbean people, especially people from Haiti and Jamaica and Trinidad, they go nuts when they get that key to open that front door.
Because that's a step that they, so a lot of people in our cultures felt like, how am I going to do? I'm a kid that came, was a child from the South Bronx. And I literally owned my first home before all the rest of my cousins that actually went to four-year college, got the master's. I did it before everybody. So it was like, whoa. And that was because my mom had done it. And I knew I wanted a better life for my son. And our realtor literally, she worked with me for 2 years.
That's a long
years
time.
Because I couldn't find anything that I liked or that was adequate for bringing my grandmother with me and him being close. It was all about the school I wanted. So it took us two years.
Let's talk about
for the
that.
School I
Some
wanted.
Of the things that people look for when purchasing a home, they look at the schools.
Yes.
They look at the crime statistics, I heard.
Yes.
You look at the environment in which your child is going to be raised. What are some of the things that you would tell a young couple who's, or just anybody in particular with children? What are they're looking for different things from an older person, from a retirement community?
Correct. A younger family is going to look out more like, say, Vieira, because it's very much a young community. It's young families. I love Vieira. It's not my place to live because
I'm a Melbourne girl. I love my Sarno area, Exora Park.
Right.
It's a nice, older, well-rounded neighborhood. I love it. I love where we live at.
Right, right.
You have Harbor City.
Very, very, very young families. And so, you know, the schools, the parks, the activities.
Mm-hmm. Right. The community. Yeah. A lot of people want that clubhouse with the swimming pool and the tennis courts and things so that they could interact with other neighbors and stuff.
Right.
And so what's happening right now, Shari? For our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with our friend Shari Tabbitt with RE/MAX. And she's got an office here in town. She'll give us her phone number in a minute on her website. But what's happening right now in Brevard with the real estate market? We're hearing that houses are maybe overpriced. Some people are bidding more than the people are asking. My friend just put a house on the market, and she said within 24 hours she had people that bid $10,000 more than what she was asking. What are you seeing in your line here?
That is very correct. I have heard $50,000, $60,000 over the asking price. I have heard 10, 12, you know, offers on any one home, and usually it's within 24 hours. And
when before you always put your first offer under the asking price.
Right, you're right.
I miss
right.
those days when you used to make your offer under the yeah. asking price. Now you've got to go exceed the right. asking
so
price just to even get a deal.
So what do you think is causing this? You think it's been caused by the pandemic, or is it because people are moving south from up north, or people from south are coming up this way?
I think it's north a combination.
To south,
it's
north
a combination.
To south or south to north. We don't
and
know.
The aeronautics.
And, yes, and the area how our business is growing in this area.
So talk to us about some of the businesses that are coming into Melbourne and how that impacts the housing market.
Sure. I mean, SpaceX is always growing.
Blue Origins.
Lockheed Martin, L3 Harris. All these companies are bringing in more employees, and they're people that are making six figures. So that really directly
affected our market.
It sure yeah. does. And
they don't want to rent. They want to own.
They want to own, and it's hard even getting people rentals these days. It's just...
Rentals are expensive, too.
They are.
So the pros and cons of owning a home. When you speak to young people, right? I'm sure there's like three top things you say to them about owning a home versus renting. What do you say to people when they say, well, I have this much saved up, and I'm paying $1,700 a month for a two-bedroom, and then you say, well, listen, you can get a home for $1,400 a month.
Right. In most cases, that is the case. You're going to pay less money. It's going to benefit you. You're going to get equity in yourself.
You
in
have
your
skin
home.
In the game in your community.
Exactly. You can paint your walls whatever color you'd like. You can get pets. You have a little bit more freedom because it's your home. You can do what you would like. Maybe move a wall, hang a picture.
Plant trees.
Yes.
Have a kitchen garden. You can't do that in an apartment sometime.
No.
So what do you think holds a lot of people back from home ownership? Because we often hear about people who say, well, I don't own a home. I never really looked into it. I always say it's because of the family, the structure. If you do it, your children will do it. If your neighbors do it, then you're going to learn, you know, from them. But a lot of people, they jump first to a credit card and send up their debt before they look into home ownership or a huge asset like that.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure you see people like that. It breaks your heart sometimes,
right,
too, because
right.
you're like, well, why do you have $10,000 in on a credit card when you don't own a home as yet?
Right. I think people are just maybe scared of home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes maybe it doesn't fit in their lifestyle for one reason or another.
Yeah. And talk a little bit, we have a few minutes left, about taxes, because people always say, well, I want to know, if I'm purchasing a home, does somebody owe any fees to the HOA? What is the tax base here? How much is this going to cost? And where does that money go when someone says, well, how much taxes do you pay? The property taxes.
Well, the money goes to our fire department, our roads, to keep all the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And when you rent, you don't have skin in the game like that.
Correct.
But
the schools.
And the schools.
Right.
Yes.
Because when you own a home and you sit down at the end of the year, or I guess sometimes it's built into your mortgage, right? And you say, okay, I'm paying X amount in taxes. And so let me think about this. I'm paying for law enforcement. I'm paying for the roads. I'm paying for my children's school. Then maybe I should know who's teaching in their school.
Right.
Maybe I should know how many teachers per student. I mean, I think home ownership is like a huge responsibility, and it holds you accountable for your community, and the community is responsible to you as well.
Yes.
You know, and I think people should think of it more in that way than, oh, I'm just going to buy a house. There's a big responsibility, and you're using Google and YouTube a lot to learn how to do home improvements, right? I'm sure you have people that say that.
Well, it's a big economic circle.
Yeah.
You buy a home, you get new flooring, carpet, whatever, you keep all these people in business. It's great for the economy.
Yeah. So when you're not busy selling homes, I can't say when you're not busy buying homes because you're selling homes.
Right.
What are you doing?
Since I live beachside, of course, I love walking on the beach.
Yeah.
Kayaking. Cool. I like listening to live music in the area, dancing. I do a little bit of painting.
Also, you check out our Ellen when she's live.
I do. I love going. I do. I go see Ellen. Yes.
Yeah.
She is wonderful.
Yeah, she sings. She sings really well.
Yeah. She is a very talented lady.
Yes. So I'm sure you have a website.
I do.
You can give our listeners here on Viewpoint with Steve and Friends a website. So if somebody wants to put a house on the market, they can call you directly and start the process.
That's right. That's right. My website is Cheryl, Sharyl, dash Tabat, Tabat, dot remax.com.
So, you know what, Sam? One of the things about our show is we give out valuable information to our listeners who are tuning in every Monday to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And we tell them, you know, what's going on in our community. We bring quality guests on here. And people may not want to sell a home right now, but they can keep the number.
Yes.
And then later on, if they need it, they can call you and talk to you about it. What about mortgages? When people get scared when they think about a 30-year mortgage, you know, and they're like, well, maybe 15 years. But there's a lot of help available for first-time home buyers.
There is.
Can you quickly, with a few minutes we have left, 2 minutes, what is available there for people who are very scared about taking out a 30-year mortgage or even a 15-year mortgage? What help would they get to buy a first home?
Well, there are several loans. I don't want to speak as a lender.
Right.
But some of the loans out there, there are some loan products for first-time home buyers that will help them perhaps with their down payment, or a grant program sometimes from time to time is available to them to help them. I always suggest people talk to a few lenders to find out the perfect fit, because there's not one size fits all in lending. So I usually give my buyers several different lenders to talk to see what might work best for them, and also get an amount. What are they looking for as a house payment? What do they qualify for? Get them pre-approved.
Yeah, because you don't want to go out and fall in love with a $400,000 house and you only qualify for
$160,000. And what about the VA loans? There's VA loans as well for people who served in the military.
Yes, there is.
So you have like a packet that you would give to a potential buyer and say, here, this is all the stuff you could look at. And you also educate people ahead of time how to preserve their credit when they're thinking about buying a home as well.
Yes. Yeah. Don't make any big purchases.
I had
the opposite effect. I had to get a credit card in order to qualify for my mortgage.
So give us the website one more time and your phone number for Remax Elite for our friend Shari Tabat, because Paul has given me that heads up.
Okay. My number is 321-313-2205. And again, the website is cheryl-tabat.remax.com.
And we want to thank Mr. Jorge Vasquez, who took the time to call in from the Advancement Project in Baltimore. And thank you, Shari Tabat, my ABWA sister, my friend, my real estate agent, a realtor friend. Thank you, Samantha. And Paul, thanks for running our board. And we'll see all. We'll be back next week. Tune in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC. Listen in to W.